It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. Today, we have an interesting podcast about real estate and about how you can find your way in real estate if you haven't already. There's some really interesting topics coming up today. Our guest today was once known as the flip king of real estate before he discovered the overlooked profits hiding in self-storage, which I always think is a fantastic business because it just sits there, makes you money month after month because all we want to do is store our stuff. So this guy's got it figured out. He's gone from flipping over 100 homes a year to making 10 times more money in profits just from doing 5 to 10 deals a year in storage. So in addition to self-storage investing, he's got a podcast called The Legacy Blueprint. He's also an author and CEO of two other 7 and 8 figure investments and businesses. So let's welcome Joe Evangelisti. Welcome, Joe. How you doing?
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate you having me, man.
Yeah, good to see you. So we talked a couple of months ago and we talked about some really cool stuff. And as you know, on the Wealth Architect podcast, we like to kind of steer people toward cash flowing investments. So first of all, let's start out with how you got started in flipping and how that transitioned over from flipping to self-storage. I think that's a pretty good place to start.
Yeah, fair enough. I think it all started actually basically with my love of construction. I grew up as son of a drywall contractor turned general contractor. My dad was building houses by the time I was in high school. And he was really the first entrepreneur in our family's lineage. And, you know, his parents came off the boat from Italy. You know, they always got W-2 jobs. My grandmother was a cafeteria lady. My grandfather, who I never met, sold insurance. And, he was the first one to decide like, hey, I'm not going to do the traditional route. You know, I think he went through a semester of college and then dropped out and started his own business. And, yeah. You know, growing up, my whole goal in life was just to work for him and eventually take over the family, you know, contracting business.
Right.
But it kind of took a turn when I got out of high school and I decided that I wanted to serve my country. And I got the opportunity to go into the U.S. Navy Seabees. So I became a builder in the Navy, which a lot of people don't even know that exists, but it was an amazing tour. Spent 6 years all over the world in different countries building really, really cool structures and projects for all different types of things. And, when I got back home, I ended up working a little bit as a general contractor, running the GC side of my dad's company. And, you know, eventually got the bug. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur myself and started flipping houses. But, you know, I got into it in probably the best time ever, 2007, to learn a lot of hard lessons, you know, but it was good though, because it taught me how to pivot. It taught me how to course correct. It taught me that, you know, we don't always go out with this, you know, idealistic idea of what business is going to look like. And it all just falls into place, right, Mark? It's generally, it's going to give you some twists and turns along the way. And
so let me ask you, because I know that that's how most entrepreneurs really learn stuff is when you have a plan and, you know, if you want to make God laugh, you tell her your plan. So if you have a plan, that's when you learn stuff, because all of a sudden you're going to have to pivot. But what are some of the lessons you learned in 2007, specifically from a financial perspective?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of it, well, number one, I was going into a traditionally old fashioned 20% down, buy a house, go to a bank, get a construction loan. Yeah. And I learned one lesson, which was I very quickly ran out of cash, right? I did 3 houses and my entire Navy savings was gone. And, I had to find out how to feed a family. And I had young kids at that time and, you know, run a household when what you thought was going to make you a bunch of money now is not, you know, coming to fruition. I had to learn how to pivot and financially, I never wanted to be a landlord. I'm glad I am now because we've collected a good portfolio, but, back then I just thought I'd be a construction guy, flip houses, make a bunch of cash. And, financially I had to learn how to stabilize an asset, go back to the bank, get a long-term loan, put tenants in place, learn how to collect rent, be a good landlord, that type of thing. And that really set the tone for, you know, the next 15 years.
And so then you went into and you did the flipping business, but you had to pivot. So now it's a pivoting toward cash flow, right?
Yep.
And then that sounds good. So why would you give that up? That sounds like a good gig. Like that's what I talk about all the time is cash flow. Why would you give that up?
Yeah, it was always a blend. You know, in the single family world for me, it was always a blend. I owned brokerage. I had, you know, I could get paid commissions so I could have some, you know, some 1099 income. I had rental properties that were cash flowing. And then of course we flipped and made some, you know, cash monthly, you know, cash flow back and forth from deals. But I was just saying this the other day and it's so true. you know, you see all these gurus and people talking about, oh, well, buy a single family and add $500 a month per door to your cash flow. Man, I think I was 60 to 80 houses deep by the time we started making enough money to pay myself $1,000 a month. You know, it was, you know, because what happens is you have this wild income. And let's say you're grossing 20, let's say you're netting 20K a month on your rental portfolio after all, everything, all the debt is settled. You know, 1 month it's a roof. The next month it's a make ready. The next month you need a new kitchen. Next month there's a driveway or a sewer problem. So every time we made 20 grand, we spent 18.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, it took a long, long time. And now 12, 14, 15 years later, as that portfolio has matured, it's awesome, right? We're refinancing, we're getting tax-free income, we're paying off debt, we have free and clear properties, all that stuff. But it took 15 years of building that single family portfolio for it to really start to pay off for me.
Took 15 years to be an overnight success, right?
That's right. Yeah.
People don't realize how much hard work you got to do. People think
absolutely.
These days, a lot of, I just saw a post from a poll from a friend of mine who read a poll. He didn't do the poll. And he said that when you ask people in China what they want to be, you know, when they grow up, they say engineers. When you ask people what they want to be in the United States, they say YouTubers.
So it's probably not.
We forget that there's a lot of hard work in going into building, you know, cash flowing assets and, you know, and to becoming successful. We just think that it's really easy. And, you know, a few people make it in YouTube and a few people make it in engineering. And those are not the people that, you know, get lucky. They're usually people that put in the hard work.
And then, you know, I'll tell you the truth too. It's true across the board. Like, in other words, your favorite YouTuber who's making millions of dollars a year or month or whatever, this guy's been doing it for 10, 12 years. Everybody looks at this guy, Mr. Beast. Right. He's like 25 years old. He started doing YouTube when he was 12.
Yeah.
You know, and now he's making millions of dollars. And they're like, man, I wish I was him. It took him over a decade of posting videos, you know, on YouTube back when it wasn't cool.
Right. Did you see that movie that he put out a few years ago about Justin Bieber?
Mm-mm, no.
Same story. This kid, you know, he was a kid, so he didn't have that big a runway, but, you know, he was trying everything and he has some talent for sure, but it was because he was relentless in putting things out and relentless in working and relentless in just going after it that he finally got his big break. And then of course, you know what happened after that.
Yeah.
But that's usually the story, but we don't hear the unsexy part of all the hard work you got to put in. We always hear, oh, easy for them. Let's tax them. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that's the issue. Okay. So you've got a great portfolio and then you said, you know what, I'm going to move into self-storage. What prompted self-storage as opposed to all the other things that you could have done?
Yeah. Well, as opposed to other asset classes, that's one story. You know, we really looked hard into multifamily apartment assets and, you know, a good buddy of mine, Tim Bratz, ran a group called the Commercial Empire. It was 5-6 years ago. And Tim built up like 5,000 units in 5 years. So, I mean, he kind of, he did it big. He scaled fast. But I remember being in that room where there was probably 200 or 300 people and we were all talking about acquisitions and they were going, yeah, we're putting in LOIs and it takes 20 to 30 to win a deal. Now, fast forward 5-6 years, it's 150 LOIs to buy a decent apartment complex. And, you know, I always have this approach of, I don't want to be in the red ocean. If you're familiar with the Blue Ocean strategy, the Blue Ocean book. And I just stood in that room and I thought to myself, man, there's a lot of really smart people in this room trying to buy apartments. I better figure out how to buy something else.
Yeah.
And, you know, another kind of lucky timing is I looked into different assets, office, retail, you know, different types of commercial mixed use, you know, and then eventually I got on the phone with a now buddy of mine who was doing self-storage. He had a very similar background to me. And he'd done tons of home developments and planned unit developments and restaurants and all that kind of thing. And he said, Joe, and it stuck with me to this day. He said, once you build your first self-storage facility, you'll never touch another thing again. You won't even build your own house. You'll hire someone to build your house. And he wasn't wrong, you know, because what we do, what we build is concrete, steel, and asphalt. You know, it might be big, it might be expensive, but it's super simple.
Yep.
And, you know, then the asset that leads after that is obviously simple to manage, simple to maintain, very little deferred maintenance over time or you know, updated CapEx or anything like that. And, you know, eventually becomes an amazing asset. So that's our goal, is to develop amazing assets that are going to pay us for life.
Yeah, I'm not a real estate guy anymore. I came from a long, you know, line of real estate investors. My dad was really good at it. He did a lot of multifamily stuff. And I always thought, you know, if I'm going to really ever get back into real estate, and I prefer the stock market, it does for me way better than what I've done in real estate personally, but I still believe in real estate for people.
Sure.
But for me, there's only two classes of assets that I would be in real estate. It's self-storage and mobile home parks.
Yeah.
Because once you put them in, there's not a lot of maintenance, right? And then somebody else can really do the simple maintenance.
Yeah.
And so that's more passive income than say apartments where you have to have a full-time manager and dealing with tenants and fixing things up and all that kind of stuff. So I understand why you're not in multifamily. I certainly understand because I have a lot of buddies that are in multifamily and they're, you know, they're doing the buy, cash out, refinance, you know, all that stuff. And it doesn't always work out as well as it sounds. So, okay. So you got some, hey, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What are the statistics? I know. What are the statistics on how many, the percentage, how many Americans put things in self-storage, have a self-storage unit?
15% on average have something in self-storage at any given time. You know, in this last couple of years, the really interesting thing that kind of juices me up about, you know, the news, the media, whether we're in a recession or we're not, and all this kind of good stuff is self-storage really only has about a 40 to 50 year recorded history. And before that, it wasn't even considered like an asset class. It was just a bunch of garages. And in the 40, 50 year recorded history from the late 70s till today, you're talking about an industry has never had a downturn. And imagine all those crazy economies we've been through and the recessions and the Great Recession and the resets and all. Self-storage actually benefits when things are shaking up and moving because people are downsizing, they're upsizing, businesses are closing, businesses are opening. So, you know, even though it stays steady when the economy is in a good market, it actually bumps up faster when the economy is in, you know, some sort of turmoil. And that to me, you can't say that about anything else. You know, I mean, you know, office and retail took a big hit during COVID, you know, self-storage continued to rise during COVID. And it continues to do so today. I think that we're on the precipice of the next 10 years of self-storage becoming like a major, major thing for a lot of people.
That's amazing. I you can trade self-storage in the stock market. There's, you know, Public Storage is the name of probably the most popular company out there. And I used to trade, I think I bought some shares way back, probably in the early 2000s, 2010, somewhere in between then. And I think it had a yield of like 8%. Mm-hmm. So you could buy this thing and just from the stock, it's a real estate investment trust, you make 8%. But so many people have bought it and bid it up.
Yeah.
And now when you buy it, you get like a 2% yield, something like that, if I remember my numbers right. So it's a popular asset. And for good reason, right? And so there's lots of ways you can invest in it. So I see why being an owner operator of this and maybe building a portfolio of it makes sense. So how can we get into that business? People that are thinking this is a cool class for them. Maybe they want to be in real estate because there's a lot of advantages with depreciation and phantom income. Let's talk about that. First of all, what kind of benefits are there for being in financial? And then how can we learn about those things? Hey, it's Mark Yeagy here to tell you about our Cash Flow Machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2 to 4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2 to 4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more.
Yeah, I think that there's a multitude of different ways, right? So the way we train it is if you have any background in real estate investing, in my personal opinion, if you've done wholesale, brokerage, single family, multifamily, you've got some experience. There's no reason you can't get into an asset class like self-storage. Start small, you know, buy a small facility, work your way up. We had, you know, 12 years of experience, you know, doing construction, management, design, you know, all that stuff. So we jumped right into Class A facilities, right? And the end goal there is I want facilities that the REITs want to buy when I'm looking to sell off in 15 years. And so when you stay above 80,000 square foot, you're on their radar. You're in their backyard. You're competing with them. Not only that, I get one of the top three REITs to sign off on each deal before we break ground on it. So I'm getting CubeSmart or Life Storage or Extra Space or U-Haul to stamp the, yes, this is a good spot, because they're going to get the management contract. One of those are most likely going to get the management contract.
Honestly. Oh, really?
And so yeah, I look at us as peer developers. I want to develop. I want to build a Class A facility. I want to hand it off to CubeSmart. They're going to manage it. We're going to oversee the asset, obviously.
Ah, okay.
But the day-to-day, I don't have to be boots on the ground. They're going to fill it up. They're going to ramp it up. And their end goal is to acquire assets, but they don't want to develop and they don't usually want to ramp up, right? So it's kind of a win-win. Once they ramp it up, if it makes what we think it's going to make, NOI, then they're potentially going to be your buyer. And so that's why you kind of want to work, you know, hand in hand with them. But going back to who can get involved, if you're in real estate already, it's a no-brainer. You know, if you come in as an accredited investor and you want to learn more about the asset class and you want to meet face to face with other investors that you could potentially do deals with, and you want to network and you want to understand what you're investing in more, then it's also a great room to be in. And then last but not least are the contractors, right? We got design teams, we have architects, we have MEP, we have, you know, a whole slew of subcontractors, our steel folks, our, you know, all that type of thing. And having them have access to other potential development deals and developers is just a great place to be.
Mm-hmm. Let's say you get a CubeSmart.
Yep.
Do you design it for them? Do you color it, put the doors the same colors and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's a great question. I get that often. No is the answer. We do neutral facilities. Yeah. So what happens is I'll design a facility, and we're on our 12th site right now. And the ones that are in Texas look just like the ones in New York as New Jersey. It's just it's a master design once you design it once.
Yeah.
Which can't really be said for the residential world. You know, We sat through maybe a 2-hour design meeting to design $200 million worth of commercial real estate versus, you know, every house we did was a new kitchen meeting and a bathroom meeting and a tile meeting. I go on and on, but all of our facilities are almost identical. Wow. And they're neutral. Yeah.
And what kind of cap rates are these when you do flip them? And I know it varies from region to region, but you know, what kind of?
There's been high pressure on them. We're not negotiating any active sales right now. We're keeping the ones we have, but you know, they were pushing into the threes. You know, there has been reports of, you know, Public buying up 12, 15 sites across Arizona and New Mexico last year, and they were like a 3.5 cap. I'm not saying that's going to hold tight, but the thing about the institutions is, as you're aware, Mark, they have way cheaper money than most of us.
Sure. Right?
They're not just going to a bank. They're, you know, they have institutional financing that's long-term, and, you know, and they're also trading on the fact that they're making a 5-8% management fee on that site. So, you know, once they're in place, that can play into the cap rate. So let's say they're getting a 5 cap management and they buy it for 3, they're really getting it for 8, you know?
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Interesting. Okay. And so how can people learn more about it? Because even if you're in real estate, let's say you're a multifamily developer or even an investor in a multifamily syndicate, how do you start to realize, okay, look, there's a pivot that I need to make over into this business. How do I evaluate whether it's for me?
Yeah, the best place, we're trying to create the nation's best resource for that at storagesyndicate.com. Okay. And what I mean by that is there are a million ways that you guys can learn to do deals without ever actually getting into our mastermind. I mean, you can get my book for $5. You can start with that. We have courses, we have trainings, we have tons of free trainings. You know, it's like anything else, Mark. It's like you pay attention. You know, yeah. Tony Robbins, everything he's ever said has been recorded on YouTube somewhere, but still people pay to go to his events. I want to be kind of the same way. I want to give away everything humanly possible. And then if you want to get in our network and you want to work with us directly, you have the opportunity to join the mastermind.
And that mastermind, let's talk about mastermind, because I'm a big believer in them. I've started, founded several of them.
Yep.
I have a couple of really active ones that are really rewarding for me because I know they help people. How do you help people through a mastermind? And tell us maybe what a mastermind is for the listeners that don't know.
Well, so we call it the syndicate for a reason, right? So like, you know, if you know anything back in the day about like the mobs in New York City, right? It was always the bosses came together. And they were always like kind of in competition, but then they would share contracts. Like, oh, you get the trash contract, you get the concrete contract. And they would grow together as a group. So when I think of our syndicate, it's really a community of, yes, we're in competition, but the more that we share, the more we're going to grow as an abundance mindset. Yep. And so just this year alone, we've had 3 different people get into their first development deal, never be in self-storage before. And most of these guys that have gotten into these deals have some kind of background single family, but not necessarily as much as you might think. And so what we're trying to do as a community is connect the dots, right? As a GP, you might have background in construction or property management, project management. You might have that skill set. So we'll connect you with the design team and the architecture team and the due diligence team. We have a product called Shovel Ready Storage, where we'll actually take a project all the way to permit and then sell it with a permit so that you don't have to go build an acquisitions team and a due diligence team and understand the design process. Here's literally a shovel ready deal where if you go raise the money, you can put it together and you could build a deal yourself. And then again, it's connecting subcontractors, right? So, you know, we can benefit when I can put my steel guy on 10 new projects a year, that savings is going to be, you know, felt across all different projects. So our job is really to be the great connector and the teacher. But I always tell people, like, I'm not the end all expert in the industry. My job is to connect, right? Yeah. And the reason I'm good at what I do is because my chief development officer has built 400 self-storage facilities.
Wow.
Right. So I'm leaning on his expertise to be the guy to go to for that. And just like I think people inside the group should be leaning on other people's expertise. Maybe they need a KP to sign for the loan. Maybe they need a banking introduction. Maybe they need design team, you name it. Our job is to help figure out where does each person fit comfortably in the deal and how do we share the rest of it so that we can build a really great project.
And I know that financing and money is the driver for this deal in addition to the market and, yep. And the space, but how hard is it to raise money for this space right now?
So it's funny because I think the private money game is just as easy as it's kind of always been. It's just a matter of the conversation, right? So, you know, if you're dealing with folks who are naturally going to be, you know, afraid and, you know, freeze and not want to do anything as far as investing, those aren't really our people. Like if you're an accredited investor, you got that way because you understand when to take risks and how to take them and how to hedge yeah. your bets and how to bet on the right operator and make sure that you're safe. And, you know, so I really just make sure that we're working with educated people, which, you know, isn't really quite hard when you're talking about, you know, $100,000 or $200,000 or $500,000 investment.
Right.
Folks who have that kind of capital laying around generally are, you know, smart enough to know when to make the right moves. You know, again, private money. Yeah. It's always has been, but I really think it's a matter of the situation and the conversation you have in leading up to it.
Ah, interesting. Okay. Well, that's good to know because a lot of people just have no idea, including me. I didn't know. Is it hard? Is it easy? But I think your answer is right. So let me just summarize for our guests and listeners, and you're our guest. Let's summarize for the listeners and viewers. So you're a guy that's built your past in building stuff, right? So you've clearly built businesses. You've built houses, right? You're a builder, right? You're also a connector. Mm-hmm. And you learned a lot of lessons from some adversity that you had in 2007. You learned that cash is king. You learned that you've got to pivot. And I always say he who's most flexible wins. And so you certainly think, you know, embrace that. And that you learn how to stabilize assets, which is important. I'm going to paraphrase this, but this is something that I say, there's no real passive income, right? Yeah. It, you know, there's whether it's one single family house where you got to go plunge a toilet at 2 o'clock in the morning or a portfolio of things, it ain't passive. There's always some hair on it, right? So you maybe agree with that.
Yep.
And you've got a mastermind and you've got a whole list of resources. And one of the things you said is when you pay attention. And that makes sense to me running a mastermind group. Because when you pay, you're going to go through all the modules, you're going to learn it, you're going to want to learn more because you don't want to waste your money. How can people find out a little bit more about you, Joe? And then we'll say goodbye.
Yeah, like I said, they can visit thestorage syndicate.com. There's a ton of free resources on the site. If you want to and you're feeling like you want to take the next step, there's a game plan call you can set up with Steven, who's actually my little brother who runs he's the director of education for the syndicate. And you know, he'll essentially do a 10-minute game plan call and see what is your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? What do you need from us? If we're a good fit, awesome. If we're not, you know, he'll direct you to training or something that might help you. But again, our goal is to just align with some amazing operators over this next 3 to 5 years. And, you know, we've been lucky enough, knock on wood, to do that this year. So I'm excited about it.
Kudos to you for the hard work you've put in to get to where you are and now to pivoting to how you're helping people, because that's where it all comes down and that's what we're all about. And if people could, if one person listening or viewing this podcast can learn a bit more about the self-storage business and we can help them, that's really great. It's the Storage Syndicate or storagesyndicate.com?
I think we own both, but it's thestorage syndicate.com.
Okay, everybody. It's thestorage syndicate.com. So thank you, Joe, for your time, your wisdom. Really appreciate your being on. And everybody else, thank you for being back to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Remember what I always say, never give up your power in your health, your wealth, or your time. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you next time. You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.